supported Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, you probably read about him in ancient history. He was a president of the United States. Makes me sad I even have to say that. I agreed with the principles on which he ran the government. I liked his speeches. I was friends with others who supported him. I believe he did a lot of good for this country. I enjoyed prosperity and peace under his rule. Some of his diplomatic actions literally changed the world for the better. But I didn't obey him. And I still tweaked a little bit on the laws, like speed limits. Maybe I embellished a little bit on my charitable donations to just a tick to bump up my refund. But I didn't really know him. Keith had a minor procedure a couple years ago, and his nurse told us that he was a veteran. And I thanked him for his service, and he said, "I really didn't do anything. I was in active duty while Reagan was president, and it was a very peaceful time in the world." And he wasn't really sure if that was because of Reagan's efforts diplomatically or because the world thought he was absolutely crazy and would push the button. I'm not sure who's right. But I've never met Reagan. I've never read his books. And I certainly didn't have a relationship with him. I was a big fan of Ronald Reagan. I proudly called myself a Republican. Now I've done it. But I wasn't a follower of Ronald Reagan, and as other presidential candidates have risen to the top, I've supported them as well. I've allied myself with them the same way. I've become fans of them. My loyalty didn't remain with Ronald Reagan. I was a big fan, not a follower. Our churches are full of fans of Jesus Christ. We agree with his principles and teachings. We like his speeches. We have friends who are fans as well. We proudly call ourselves Christian. We see how he brings about peace and joy in folks' lives. We believe he makes the world a better place, but we don't obey him. We don't trust him as Lord of our lives, of everything in our lives. We don't do what he told us to do. We don't read his book. We really don't know him. We don't have a relationship with him. We're fans. Not followers. The scripture today talks about how God feels about Jesus fans. So there's this feast, a certain man. I wonder if it's the same guy. Do you notice how many times stories in the Bible start with a certain man? Is it the same guy? I wonder if he lived 2,000 years. Anyway, that's just an aside. That's a squirrel. Yeah, right. A certain man was going to have this party. Now, back then, because of the way the world was back then, if you were going to have a big party, you sent out the invitation, sort of like our Save the Date. And you got RSVPs off the initial invitation. That told you how much food to prepare, how many supplies and provisions to bring. And then you plan the party and cook all the food, and then a second invitation goes out that says, okay, it's ready now. Everything's done. Come on over. And these invitations would have been going out to friends and family, folks the certain man knew, folks the certain man had a relationship with. And to cancel ever one of these banquet invitations the second time was rude. But this was my friend. Certainly he'd understand. Three of the guests canceled the last minute. And the Bible clearly says these are excuses, not reasons. And there's a difference between an excuse and a reason. I've got the flu is a reason. My nose is running and I don't feel like going is an excuse. One by one, these people started making excuses. On the back of an excuse is a lack of desire. There was no rational reason why someone would not want to be part of this giant party. They just didn't want to go. So the first one said, "I just bought a farm and I must go and see it. Please excuse me. Yes, I realize you included me in your party. And I realize I said I'd come, but I've got business to attend. I'm expanding my company so that I can become more successful. I've got to mind the store." Yes, Jesus, I called you Lord. I accepted the saving grace of forgiveness through your sacrifice. Yes, I realize I'm one of your people and I'm welcome at your table. But I've got an empire to build, a retirement account to fill, a new car to pay for. Surely you understand my need for more stuff overrides your need to spend time with me at your party. The second person said, I bought 5 team of oxen and I'm going to go check on them. Please excuse me. That's probably a lie. Back then you didn't buy oxen until you tried them out first. I'm too busy. I have far too much on my plate right now to honor my relationship with you. Maybe next time you invite me, I won't have so much going on. And I think this is the most common one that Christians do. I'm happy to give you an hour a week on Sunday morning to stop by and get myself fed, get my warm fuzzies on, hear about how much Jesus loves me. Thank you very much. But serve during the week, read my Bible, spend time in prayer daily, help with the youth or the children or the outreach events or the other ministries of your church. Oh, no, I am far too busy for that. I've got a lot going on. Maybe next time you ask, I'll be able to come. Rick Warren says this, if you're too busy for God, it's real simple. You're too busy because you're putting everything else in front of the number one commandment. Here's the test. What's the number one commandment? Sherry has it. The number one commandment, and Jesus said this is the number one commandment, love God with all of your heart, your soul, your mind, and strength. Yes, Jesus, I called you Lord. I accepted the saving grace of forgiveness through your sacrifice. Yes, I realize I'm one of your people and I'm welcome at your table. But I've got work and friends and family and chores and hobbies and voice and the voice and words with friends. Surely you understand my busyness overrides your need to spend time with me at your party. That was not directed at you. That was directed at me. Sherry's one of my words with friend people. I have 2,957 games going right now. Another one said, I just got married, so I can't come. My husband, my wife, my mom, my dad, my children, my grandchildren come first. They're my priority. Surely that makes me a good person if I value my relationships that much. But really, if this guy was invited, his family would have been invited too. Yes, Jesus, I called you Lord. I accepted the saving grace of forgiveness through your sacrifice. Yes, I realize I'm one of your people and welcomed at your table. But every other one of my relationships is far more important than you are. And I'm not really interested in introducing my family and friends to you. Surely you understand my desire to spend time with my family overrides your need to spend time with me at your party. The problem here is a basic lack of desire. These people will get what they want. They can have all the toys they can collect in life. They can even have a great time making money and being successful. They can enjoy their wife and other relationships to some extent, but they don't want the right things, so they will miss out on the indescribable blessings of God. We're fans of yours, Jesus. We just can't be inconvenienced to make an effort to come and see what you're offering. So the host gets mad. He's laid out this feast, spent all this time and money on a party that his friends can't be bothered to attend. And so he sends his servants out to find those who want to attend, who will appreciate the gift, people with whom he can build relationships with. The story was told while Jesus was at a party, a dinner thrown by a high-ranking official in the Pharisees. And this next part would have just made them bristle, because Jesus is clearly saying the least of these, the sick, the lame, the unclean, Gentiles, those people are welcome at God's feast as well. The master of the house became angry and said to his servant, go quickly to the city street, the busy ones, the side streets, and bring the poor, the crippled, the blind, the lame. So the servant went out and he brought back boatloads of the unworthy, the unchosen, to the feast. But there's still room for more. And so now the master extends the invitation to the foreigners. He talks about the highways. Those are folks outside of Jerusalem. That's a reference to us, the Gentiles being included. The master says to the servant, go to the highways and back alleys and urge people to come in so that my house will be filled. The servant does that. The house is full and the party starts. This tells us that there is always room at the table. God's blessings and provisions are so great that he will never, ever, ever run out of room for anyone. And all are invited. Now, I want you to notice something, that the people who made the excuses, they were not uninvited. The Bible says, I tell you, not one of those who were invited will taste my dinner. He doesn't say, rescind the invitation. They can still show up if they want to the party. The problem is, because they were rude, because they had rejected the master, because they had made these excuses to not be in relationship with the master, they just don't get to eat. They don't get any of the good stuff. Long time ago, I actually had this happen. I was, Sarah was invited to a birthday party. And because I'm so important, I never got around to RSVPing. She doesn't even know this. I didn't get around to RSVPing, but we went anyway. And I was greeted at the door by the mom who said, we weren't expecting her. There's no goodie bag for her. We don't have any extra food for her. She got invited to the party, and she went to the party, but she didn't get any of the good stuff. And they made provision for her. Once you're saved, you cannot be unsaved. The table of grace is open and remains open to everyone. But this isn't the first place in the Bible that reminds us that if you want the blessings that come from being a Christ follower, as opposed to being just a Jesus fan, he has got to be your number one priority. You have got to pursue a close relationship with him through worship, through prayer, through Bible study, through service. You have to obey his commands, especially those commands to serve the poor and build the kingdom and to tell other people about him and use your gifts and talents. You can go off to pursue material things and keep your schedule packed full and develop other relationships, but the invitation will still stand. But your life is going to be a lot fuller. Your life is going to be a lot fuller, more peaceful, more joyful, more beautiful, if you show up to the party. I've had seasons in my life when I've tried to build my empire, working 60 hours a week, driving a new car, having stuff, busting my butt to get ahead, and I look back now on those years of seeking career advancement and see them as a waste. I was working about 60 to 70 hours a week. I was going in and I was staying till well past midnight and getting up the next morning and going in at 7 o'clock and starting it again. I worked for a guy named Floyd, and one day my little daughter looked at me and said, Mommy, why does Mr. Floyd make you work so hard? Mr. Floyd wasn't making me work so hard. My daughter missed me, but I was the one setting my own schedule in pursuit of something. And now, even now, I'm not spending enough resources on kingdom building as I think I should be. And that's my vocation. I've had seasons in my life when I've been too busy to do what God has called me to do, usually too busy with insignificant things I've put on my own calendar just because it seemed unreasonable to have empty slots. People, if you don't take anything else out of here today, let me tell you, it's okay to have open time and open spaces on your schedules. I've wasted a lot of time doing other things rather than spending time with the very one who created time. I really would like to have some of those hours back. Time is God's. Time is his, not mine. And I've wasted a whole lot of God's time doing non-God things. I've had seasons in my life when I've put a lot of focus and energies into relationships that I thought would make me happy. A lot of them failed. I can't help but wonder if some of those relationships would still be intact had I put Christ in the middle of them. if I had sought satisfaction and fulfillment in my relationship with him first and built my relationships with others based on that. And so I can identify with the excuse makers. I'm one of the biggest excuse makers, and I confess I've had very few reasons, but I've made a whole lot of excuses for not doing what God has called me to do in my life. But I can also identify though with those lame, the sick, the outsiders, the unworthy ones who eventually were invited to the feast. I've had times in my life when I've been mired in my own sin, trapped in the muck of the world. And then I've heard the Lord say, "Hey, Nance, I'm throwing a party. Come on over." And I've gone running back into his arms, running back into his presence, because I've repented and I've had a desire to feast on his love. But the one in the story who I most want to identify with is the servant. I was the executive assistant for a president of a mid-sized company here in Elkhart. I was the gatekeeper. Nobody got to him unless they went through me. And when he was out of town, if decisions were going to be made, I made them. I like to pass myself off as just the secretary, so no one knew. The truth was, I was the second most powerful person in that company, because no one got to the president except for through me. His success was mine. His accolades were mine. I was held up in high regard and highly respected because folks knew if they needed to get to the boss, they had to get through me. But I was the servant. I was the one who was living in obedience to the authority in my workplace. And the servant in the Bible, the one who's living in obedience, the one that's assigned the task of inviting others to come in, thinking about it, that guy is the one who gets to live with the master. See him every day, in his house every day. And when the master needs something to be done, that guy is the one that gets to do it. He's the one who gets to help with and participate in the feasts and the parties. He may not be dancing, but he gets to stand and clap along to the music in the master's house. And he gets to bask in the success of his master and be a part of that success. He gets to go to the guy who bought the oxen and said, "Yeah, that big party. Not only was I there, I helped plan it." So it's the servant who I want to be most like. And it is the servant who I'm striving to be most like. I'm still making my excuses on a regular basis. I still check myself because Jesus is not always the number one priority in my life. But I'm tired of making excuses. How about you? Jesus is my Lord, and I'm ready to help him prepare the feast. I'm ready to get out the invitations. I'm ready to get the word out to folks to come and join him and get ready for the party. I'm ready to serve him. I'm ready to make him a priority. I'm ready to quit ignoring him. I'm ready to start doing or continue to do what he's called me to do. And I'm ready to get the blessings that you get when you have that mindset. I'm ready to eat the food. How about you? The servant went out and invited others to the banquet. A banquet, a table has been set for you. The invitation is extended to each one of you. Jesus wrote that invitation on the night that he was betrayed, when he gave us this wonderful, wonderful thing we call communion. At the Passover meals with his dear friends, he took the bread and he blessed it and he broke it and he said, "This is my body. When you eat this, remember me." And then he took the cup and he blessed. And he said, this is the cup of the new covenant. This is the new way of doing things. And when you drink this, remember me. And so today, like the servant in this Bible story, I'm going to extend an invitation to you to come to the party by serving you. And I'm going to invite you to invite others to come to the party by serving them. Today we're going to pass the plate like we're at a party. After you've taken the bread and juice and have served the next person, you're at that time welcome to come to the altar and present your prayers, your offerings, your petitions. Spend as much time as you want. This invitation's for everyone. You're welcome to light a candle. It just symbolizes your prayers going up to heaven. He hears it whether or not you light the candle, but it's a good way to stay focused. The prayer loom is also available. Altar rails are available. However you want to spend this time, but spend this time in prayer. And I ask that during our communion today, after you are extended the invitation through the bread and juice, that you take time to accept the invitation and thank Jesus for inviting you to his party. When you pass the bread and the juice, you can do one or two three things. You can say nothing. You can say, this is Jesus' blood and body. Or you can say, take and remember, however you'd like to do it.